Hey guys, Ed here. We're going to get started in just a minute. I see John Lucas here. Hey, welcome. We're just going to get a couple things set up and just give a couple other people a chance to join us, and then we'll get going. All right, guys, let's go ahead and get started. I see that there's only a couple of us here, but hey, that's just more time for those who are here. And I'm sure we'll get one or two more joining us. I don't want to delay our call here. So let's go ahead and get started. And first of all, I wanted to welcome you guys, this new cohort to B2B Business Launcher. So John Luke, Michael, hey, welcome. It's great to have you guys on board. This is going to be a fun journey. It's going to be a challenging journey. It is, you know, as I've talked about in the sessions, it's going to challenge you. You're going to have to get out of your comfort zone, but the good news is, you know, I'm providing you with a step-by-step roadmap here. And I think it's also good to know that many people have walked the same path. You're not alone. You have others who are walking it with you. I have walked down this path. Many others have walked down this path, and we've created some great success stories. So just know you're not alone. Know that, you know, the fears, the challenges that you face along the way, they're not unusual, and that's how you learn. You know, that's how you learn. So my hope is that Susan and I can basically narrow down the options for you. You know, as you embark down this path, what tends to happen is there's so many things you could do, so many things you could try, and there's so much information out there that it's so easy to get overwhelmed. And what we're doing here in this program is we're really narrowing things down. However, that doesn't mean you can just plug and play these things blindly and just, you know, everything will work out perfectly. It doesn't. So you will also have to learn how to be resourceful, how to be smart and resilient, and how to adjust some of these ideas based on what you're seeing. So basically, as you start seeing what's working, what's not working so well, bring those up to us, you know, in these calls, and let us know how we can help. If you're stuck somewhere, if you're not sure how to apply a certain idea, if you're got several thoughts about how you should position yourself or how you should communicate your value, that's why we're here. Okay. So just know that these calls, or we're here for you to help you through this process. The training sessions are there to walk you through the roadmap and to give you clear instructions. And very, very important that you implement the material as you go. So don't fall into the trap of, especially the first four or five sessions, don't fall into the trap of, okay, yeah, I took some good notes. I get it. I understand these concepts. It makes perfect sense. Let me move on to the next one. No, you're doing yourself a disservice if you do that. So take the time to implement the material and do that before you move on to the next one. So that's another very important point for you to get the most out of this program. So, hey, with that, you'll see us doing this every time we have one of these calls, but we're going to run through a few slides. And I skipped the first one today, which is on wins. We're always going to start by sharing the wins from the past couple of weeks since we last met. And wins, as you'll see, and we'll keep emphasizing this, there could be anything big or small. So especially during the first few weeks of the program, a win is just going to be, hey, you know what? I'm making progress. I did something that that I normally wouldn't have done. I just mustered the courage to contact this person or to go ahead and, you know, go live with my website. Any of those things are absolute wins. And of course, as you move through and you start talking with prospects and you land some clients, then your wins will shift. But we'll always start there. We're going to skip that slide today. And then we're going to ask you about what material you're currently implementing in the program. Everyone's going to be working at a different pace, okay? And as you'll see, some people are going to just gun right through this. And again, you want to make sure you implement as you go. Others are going to go a little bit slower. There's no right or wrong, okay? You can dial this up or down based on your goals, based on your available time, based on you know, how you want to go about this. But it's always neat to see where everybody is in the program. And then we're going to get to Q&A and discussions, okay? So with Q&A, it's very straightforward. We want to make this as personalized and helpful for you as we possibly can. So the way we'll do this is rather than unmuting everybody and then, you know, kind of creating a bit of chaos there or, you know, dealing with background noise, everyone will always come into the call on mute. And then if you have a question, just go to the chat area here on Zoom. And that's how we're mostly going to communicate. But if with questions, what we'll do is we'll unmute you. So if you have a question, just type in capital Q in the chat area and just give us an idea of what you've got. Okay. Or you can even say, I got a question, but type in a Q in front of it because that will be our Q for, no pun intended, but our cue to see that, hey, that's a question. And then what we'll do is we'll unmute you and we can have a conversation. So we get to do some great one-on-one work here in these calls rather than it being where it's just me talking or Susan talking or answering. It's going to be very interactive. All we ask is you keep your question focused and specific. So rather than, okay, well, how do I get clients? That's a really big question. And we actually have great training on that, but what about getting clients? You know, so where are you right now? What have you tried? What challenge are you facing in this area? So let us know. And that's going to be much more productive for you than asking a really big, broad question. One question per person. That way we could get to everybody very quickly, but we always have time for 2-3 rounds as needed. And if it's the kind of thing where you're considering two different options, let's say with your positioning, then let us know what those are, you know, so give us as much information as possible when we talk. And that way we don't go down a rabbit hole and discuss things or bring things up that maybe aren't really useful for you. Okay. So pretty straightforward. If you got a question, just type it in, Q in the chat area, give us an idea of what it is, and then we'll go ahead and meet you and we'll have a conversation. So with that, let's see, we got four of you on. We got Chris, John Luke, Michael, Sam. Again, welcome aboard. It's great to have you here. So again, if you have a question, just type in Q in the chat area, let me know, and then we'll go ahead and get going. And while we're waiting, Michael typed in the in terms of where he is right now, what he's implementing. He's doing a website revamp, also waiting for the prospecting courses to open up to set the previous stuff with you. Yeah, in the course earlier this year. Yeah, perfect. So good stuff, Michael. Man, it's that's awesome. So I'm curious, what did you find? In fact, let me unmute you. And we could have a quick chat. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Ed. How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Good.
So what, I'm curious, you know, with the website revamp, what did you find needed some adjusting?
I thought my About Me page was a little too focused on my biography and as opposed to, you know, what I could offer customers. Mm-hmm. I'd had that suspicion before, but like I, after going through your materials here, I decided to go more at like what I can offer prospects. Let's see, one of my writing samples I thought could be switched up. I thought I could address more of it to the COVID era. You know, the examples you give of like in uncertain times, that type of stuff.
Perfect. Yeah, it's this situation does need a little bit of refinement, doesn't it? You know, just to so you don't come across as tone deaf.
Right.
And you know, that will continue to evolve, right? Because you're probably seeing that there've been different phases to this. You know, at first everyone was freaked out and it's like, oh my God, what is this? And now it's not that the situation is improving as much as it is, we're getting a better handle on what we're dealing with here, right?
Right.
So what I've been seeing with all my coaching clients, like at different levels, it's very interesting. It's like at first, all these businesses just, they just stopped spending money. They stopped investing, period. There were a few that were really smart and they took it as an opportunity to strengthen their position. But in many cases, all these businesses freaked out. And what started happening, I would say around July, is that a lot of businesses started coming back. Now that they got their bearings straight, that they started investing in marketing again, and it's actually continued to grow, you know, over the past few months. So it's interesting to see the dynamic there.
Okay. I hope that's the case because I was not having luck with my prospecting like earlier in the year, around March, April, May. So yeah, I probably sent out over 100 prospecting emails and had one conversation with a client, you know, Zoom meeting and quote and all that. So maybe I need to send 100 more. I don't know.
Well, what we'll do is, you know, let's try kind of a new batch. And then we should probably do is figure out how to refine that, the approach.
Yeah.
So, you know, if one thing we could do is if you want to post kind of maybe a warm email, like take a prospect and, you know, kind of write, you don't have to send it, but write a warm email to them and then post it in the Facebook group and get feedback on it. Okay.
Okay.
So we can kind of figure, okay, how are you thinking about approaching it? Let's look at that.
Okay.
And the other thing too is, we're probably going to want to add a little bit of LinkedIn to the mix. And there's a couple of ways we could do that.
Okay.
So, yeah. You know, one of the things that I'm probably going to be adding to the program here is something that Susan has been working on for, it's just LinkedIn strategies she's been using for over a year now. That's been very effective. And I think that combination of the warm email plus the LinkedIn could be very powerful.
Yeah, I agree. The LinkedIn 3-2-1, I did it a little bit, but you know, maybe just like a few days here and there, not any real consistent basis.
Oh yeah. So now that one needs to be consistent because that you know how it is with have you ever heard that with like radio commercials? It's radio commercials only work if you commit to several months of the same commercial.
Hmm.
Right. So they say, okay, Look, with radio, it's about repetitiveness or consistency. So with LinkedIn 3-2-1, it's kind of the same thing, not about repetitiveness, but it's the consistency. So doing it here and there occasionally is not going to get you much.
Yeah.
It requires steady weekly work for you to do it. So yeah, you're already familiar with LinkedIn 3-2-1. And there's another strategy that I'm going to be introducing. We're going to be adding it to the prospecting sessions. Actually with somebody who just finished the program who had great luck, and she took a very different approach, and it just kind of, it was a bit of an accident. It was an experiment, really. It ended up working really, really well. So, we're going to be posting that as well.
Great.
So good stuff, man. Great to have you here.
All right. Thank you. Good to be here.
All right. We have a question from Chris. Chris says, I have a positioning question. I'm not sure if SaaS companies is too general or specific a target audience. How specific should a target market be? Great question, Chris. So let me unmute you and let's chat. Hey, Chris.
Hey there, Ed. What a treat to talk to Ed Gandia in the flesh. That's very cool.
Ah, in the Zoom flesh, right?
In the Zoom flesh. Yeah. This is really cool. Yeah. So first of all, I have to give you, I'm all paid up and stuff. Because of my day job, I'm dragging my feet a bit, but I've got to give you kudos, and I'm going to put a testimonial up there about the in-depth quality of your material. I mean, the more I go through it, the more I understand it's battle-tested stuff. It's just so evident, and I want to thank you for all the work you put into developing all this content.
Oh, thank you, man. It means a lot. I appreciate that. That's it's been several years in the making and, you know, refinement. The first version of this was in late 2012, and it's changed so much since then, you know, as the business just evolves, right? And we see what's working, not working, et cetera. So thank you.
Sure.
So SaaS, yeah. You know, it depends. So here's what I'm gonna give you a couple of different ways to think about it. And okay. In fact, let me just switch screens here, and we'll see if this helps. So I'll give you a couple of different models. There's this idea that you've heard that in marketing, it's about specificity, right?
Sure.
And that's been true for a long, long time, but now more than ever, it's true, because when there's so much noise, so many options, so many competitors, the more specific, the better. And it used to be, it's always been that way. The problem is before, you know, 20 years ago, it was very difficult to get to a very narrow market. You know, now it's much easier to connect with very specific audiences, because we have the internet and social media and all these different tools. But you also have to be careful when starting out, because you don't want to go too narrow. So generally speaking, what I like, the way I like to think of it is, you know, at the top of this funnel would be saying, hey, my market is B2B companies that sell to other companies, right? The problem there is just it's too broad. Oh, there was a time when you can kind of get away with that, but that's just not going to cut it. That's not specific enough. So the next layer down of specificity would be high tech. I'm just giving you an example. Okay.
Right.
That's a type of B2B company. That's better, much better. And here again, it could work. I know it worked for me. The moment, in fact, this was my story. The moment I went from B2B to saying I work with high-tech companies, my world changed. I mean, I was getting nowhere. And within a couple of weeks, I started getting traction. From there, you could get a little more specific and say software as a service companies. And that's even better.
I could go one deeper.
You're right. As you could see, you could go one deeper. And in fact,
I've got one to give you. And that is, LMS, learning management applications.
Yeah.
But that may be too granular though.
Well, and we'll talk about how to make the decision. And then in here, it could be like, type of LMS, like a specific type. So here's, generally speaking, I call this, this is the red zone. I like to call it the no-fly zone. Okay? Because I remember in Iraq when we did the no-fly zones, it was like in the north and the south. So same thing here. Too specific is no-fly zone. Too broad is no-fly zone. Anything in the middle could work. The sweet spot is in the middle of the middle, theoretically. So I would give high tech, you know, tech companies, I would give that kind of a yellow or an orange. And LMS would be the same thing. And here is really kind of your sweet spot. Now, that's everything else being equal. The next question becomes, all right, so tell me why you chose SaaS and more specifically why you're thinking LMS. Because if the reason you picked is good enough, you might be able to start, you might be able to start right here. Okay.
Huh. So tell me. Yeah. Well, see, here's the thing. I talked to one support actually, and I have a long career as a tech writer. And so I'm writing how-to stuff is there, targeting different audiences, sometimes within the same document or versions of documents. So I get that, but I work with companies like Sony doing web apps for internal audiences. And so I've worked with web applications, but I find myself as a consumer using tools like ConvertKit. And there's a strange bifurcation, if I may, between the big league B2B, which is like the Salesforce.com, that is more a strict like enterprise level, right? Mm-hmm. And I've seen some writing about this in marketing props and stuff like this. And there's another group that is, well, it's almost B2C or B2 infopreneur or one person business. And it's funny how the enterprise folks aren't sort of taking that market segment seriously, and maybe they should, you know? Mm-hmm. So I can see, so that's what attracts me to that, because I have a web app background. I'm a user of various types of SaaS software, and I think to be credible, I have to have a certain degree of subject matter expertise there in the subject area, therefore planning on publishing or posting articles or posts on LinkedIn and things about maybe my slant on a SaaS issue.
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing. So the point is I don't have it yet, a background in that, but I've hoped to make the case from my origin to that is not that big of a jump. I'm hoping, but that's what I'm sort of struggling with there, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. So based on what you're telling me, I feel like going to, in this example, LMS would be too narrow.
Yes.
So
yes,
here's a classic example of where it would not, and where that would actually be green instead of orange. If you were right now in your day job or in your last day job, that was your field, like you were immersed in learning management systems. So you knew the players, you had relationships, you really knew the lay of the land, then it makes sense to start there because you understand the dynamics. But when you don't, it's too big a risk because we don't know. We don't know if there's enough of them. We don't know enough viable ones. We don't have contacts. You could start there, but it would take a long time. And as you know, in this program, it's all about getting quick wins. We want to get you a client as quickly as possible, not because of the money, because that's what's going to fuel your motivation, drive, and momentum. Okay. So how do we do that? Well, we don't want to go too narrow, not because you're going to fail, but because it could take, everything else being equal, it could take longer. Now, what you could do is something a little different. You could, instead of LMS, you could say, you know, in what was it that you call it? It wasn't enterprise. It was like business to entrepreneur.
Yeah. I've seen some writing in business to business, content blogs that talk about that, but they have a name for it. It's like B2B light.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. So let's call it B2B entrepreneur side. You're right. In fact, I have several of those, right? So I have, you know, Infusionsoft, we have Lead Pages, we have.
Exactly.
And I have a bunch of these. Yep. In fact, yep. I mean, like we spend over $1,000 a month in SaaS in my business.
Wow.
Okay. Just to give you an idea. And I'm not a huge operation, right? But that's a lot of money. So in that case, I mean, that could be another green, because we know there's plenty of them. And it's not as too huge a jump from, you know, from just SaaS to here.
So you
could say SaaS, but really an emphasis on this.
So is the entrepreneur?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. I forgot to mention one important thing. On my resume, on my LinkedIn profile, I actually have two domains of experiences, tech writing and instructional design. So I've worked extensively in the area of e-learning and all that. So I haven't worked in the sales area, but I've used tools within that space.
Okay. So now, you know what though? It doesn't mean that, here's the thing, just because you're positioning this way on your website doesn't mean that you could go, that you could not go after some learning management system SaaS companies.
Robert, that seems like intuitively a little too granular though. I like a lot what you're calling out here. And you know, wouldn't it be interesting if like the appeal I could make to maybe some bigger companies is, hey, do you guys have a B2E division yet? Let me make the case for why you should consider opening up a whole new market segment.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You guys are leaving money on the table, and here's some ideas. You know what I mean? Something like that.
So think of this. You could, because keep in mind, the way you're positioning yourself, but positioning is an internal thing. It's a set of internal decisions you make. And then once you say, okay, this is about good enough, you know, maybe I'm at the 90% good enough level. So I'm going to stop thinking through this because I got to get moving. Now I got to turn this into web copy. And that's the prospect and customer facing part of positioning, which is messaging. So, but that doesn't mean, so where I'm going with that is you could say, on your website, let me read. You could say, you know, SaaS with, you know, B2E specialty, just for our purposes or focus. And then under that, that's kind of the umbrella. Under that, there's all these different categories. You know, like you could, one of them could. So when you go out to prospect, it doesn't mean that you're stuck only going after this category of SaaS. You know, you could go after all kinds of different, this could be a security platform. This could be a, you know, project management system, although that kind of falls under the B2E. But you see what I'm saying? So,
yeah, and see, I'm such a geek on that stuff. Like, I love CRM. Like, CRM is just, and PM stuff and email marketing provider stuff. So I have an intrinsic interest in those sub areas anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I see what you're saying though. And I could, but it seems like, I know you're a big proponent of not preparing examples, sample work on things because it seems like the first thing a process can say is, well, show me some samples of your work.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking one thing I consider doing is, you know, this is an approach I've used for tech writing too, is do an A-B comparison. Say, mm-hmm. Let's say I find some copy for a SaaS company in security. And then I talk to a different company and say, by the way, I found this company and here's my rewrite that better targets them. Now, is that a waste of effort, do you think?
I wouldn't worry about that yet. So what I'm hearing you say is, yeah, but you know, but this, and what about this, and what about that? You could hypothesize this to death.
Okay. Yeah.
And you're going to stay up all night worrying about this and thinking about it. My approach is really, let's take this one step at a time.
Sure.
And as you come across some of those things, then have the tools and the framework you need to be able to say the right thing. Okay. Right. So, and we'll get more into this, but there's a strategy called triangulation. That's what I call it, where if you come across a prospect who said everything checks out, right? And they say, look, do you have, we're looking for help with a white paper. I like what I read and on your website. And, you know, I think you might be able to help us. So it's a white paper that they need, you know, and then they ask, do you have any white paper samples you can send me? And you're thinking, oh my gosh, I don't, but I'm confident I could write one for them because I know that topic really well. I understand what they're trying to do with it, et cetera. Yep. So triangulation is that's what they want. What you do is you give them something or talk about something that you do have. Okay, that's similar. So let's say, and just in this example, I don't, but I have several long form articles that I've written that actually follow a similar format. And I do really well with them. And I'm confident that based on that, here's a tie-in, I would be able to do this for you. So in other words, here's what I have, and here's why if I have that and I can do that well, I'd be able to do a good job for you in the white paper. So tie-in is not just because of those long-form articles. So, you know, long-form article, I know the topic, no market. You know what I'm saying? You give them several reasons. And what you're saying is, look, I don't tick all the boxes, but the ones I do tick are important. And I'm confident I'd be able to, all I need is a chance. And then guess what? You'll get one of them saying, you know what? Let's do this. And now suddenly you have this. So the next time you're asked, now you have it. So triangulation is something you just kind of keep in the back of your head. It's a tool that you can use when you're faced with these situations. And you don't have to be 100% confident, but if you're more than 50% confident, say, here's what I do have. So don't just say, well, sorry, I don't have any, you know, I guess I'm not a good fit. Sorry, I wasted your time. No, never say that. Just, you know, talk about what you do have and where you would be able to help them. Does that make sense?
It does. And just as you were saying that I had a thought about something somewhat in between. In other words, let's say it's some SaaS company and I say, well, I don't have a finished white paper, but I'm very, very knowledgeable about the mechanics of effective white papers. In fact, may I propose the following? You give me your topic with a few brief parameters. And as a first step, I will write a brief outline of what the white paper that I envisioned as a starting point might be. Now, is that dangerous? Is that dangerous turf? Because we don't have a contract yet. We don't have a statement of business yet.
No.
But just I'm already involved with them.
That could be part of the tie-in. You know, here's what I could do. So, you know, the way you could do that is you play it by ear, but here's what I do have. Here's what I know. Here's what I got in my background and my track record. And here's what I'm willing to do.
Oh, good. Okay. Okay. So it's all part of the same thing that you're saying. This is such a good approach. And I've seen you talk about this in some of the podcasts and some of your other materials.
Yeah.
This is really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's exactly the way I would approach it. And I always think of it as a short-term problem. I'm missing X, right? So, you know, there's a list of requirements, right? I don't tick all four boxes. So I tick this one, and this one. Missing this third one is a short-term problem. Okay. So how can I reduce the friction in this situation to get this ticked so that next time it happens, I tick all four boxes? That's kind of been my approach to everything. It's don't give up. So many people say, well, and by the way, this this happens to be a bigger problem for women than for men. So there've been these studies that show that if women don't tick 100% or very close to 100% of the boxes, they don't go for something. They don't go for that thing. Men to be a little bit, men tend to be more aggressive with this. But it's, you know, everything else being equal, it tends to be a harder thing for women. But my whole thing is whether you're a man or a woman doesn't really matter. Is look at the ones you don't tick and figure, okay, first of all, you don't need to tick all the boxes, but the ones you don't tick, how can we take care of this now so this doesn't continue to be a problem?
Yeah, okay. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, you know, unfortunately, I'm a Californian. Mm-hmm. in light of your AB piece that you did.
Oh, yeah, and, AB5, uh-huh.
Yeah, so the bottom line is that, especially now in this environment, because, you know, I think a lot of freelancers are being let go. In a way, that B2E is a blessing in disguise, because the likelihood of that B2E prospect having a legal team and being really up on this whole thing is probably lower too, right?
Yeah, I would think so. And by the way, I wouldn't worry too much about it. I got quite a few clients in California, like very successful six-figure writers and copywriters. They have not been affected.
Is that right?
Wow. So it could come, but it's been an issue where their clients aren't saying, oh, our legal team is telling us we got to let you go hire you.
I was under the impression that was happening, but also to read between the lines of the attorney that you had on.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, I remember we got to do one question per person. Why don't we come back to you on that?
I appreciate that. I thank you so much for what you said. And I have good notes on it. Thank you.
Yeah. So come back. You know, feel free to just put in a queue and I'll come back to you. I just got a couple others.
Absolutely. I'm sorry for that.
It's all right. No worries.
The enthusiasm of the situation sort of carried me along. So thank you.
No, don't worry, man. No problem. I'm not finding anyone today. Next time. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So let's see. We got a question from Michael. And so, Michael, I'll come back to you. I just want to get to everyone like once, and then I'll definitely come back to you. So let's see. Carrie, what is the most effective type of extra value to offer prospects to sign up or customers to grow the relationship? Yeah. So let's talk about that. Carrie, let me unmute you.
Hi, thanks.
Hey, Carrie, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you? I'm a little, I guess it's my age showing. It took me a while to get on, but now I'm on finally.
Well, I'm glad you came on. Yeah, no worries. No worries. I was wondering where you were, because I know you said that you were coming by.
Yeah, I will. Mm-hmm.
So welcome. And tell me a little bit more about that. I'm not sure I understand the question. The most effective type of extra value to offer prospects to sign up. Sign up for what?
To give me work. And in other words, you know, in almost every business, when you're offering a service or a product, the more value you can pack into what you're offering, mm-hmm. The better chance you have of getting the job or selling the product or the service.
Yeah.
So my question is, how would that, and I've been writing forever, but I'm just getting into, thanks to you, I'm just getting into the career here. But so my question is just, is there something other than superior writing skills and, you know, experience in that particular industry or field? That seems to work best for a freelance writer in order to, you know, to either get a prospect to follow up and to give you a chance.
Yeah. So there's a pretty straightforward answer to it, and it's not in what you would think. So it's not in, hey, how can I pack more value? How can I add more, bonuses to my offer, you know, to my services. Right. It's not there. The biggest factor by far,
right,
is how well you're positioned.
Okay.
So positioning comes first.
Right.
Messaging comes second, because messaging is it's how you communicate your positioning.
Uh-huh.
I would say after that is, again, I'm going to skip prospecting because that's an activity that's going to, but let's say once you have someone who's interested, is how you qualify them.
Okay. Right.
And, you know, how you price it.
Great. So, and I've learned everything I need to know about those from your other course. So,
okay. So, you know, right now you're working on your positioning, right? And then once you make that decision, that's an internal exercise. Okay. Then you're going to go ahead and translate that to web copy. Mm-hmm. That's going to be clear and persuasive. Okay.
Okay.
That right here, I would say is, you know, easily, I would say it's 60 to 80%, you know, of the factor. So in terms of them hiring you. And then I say qualify and price because that's the, you know, that's a conversation.
Right.
So how you lead that conversation, the questions you asked, how you respond to their questions, then that's kind of, you want that to take you to kind of the 90% mark, and then pricing and follow-up. In fact, price and follow-up, that's FU is follow-up, by the way, nothing vulgar.
Right.
That's, then you want to get to 100% there. Okay.
I see.
So notice there's nothing in here about, you know, but wait, there's more, you know,
right.
I'll throw in these knives. Or if you buy today,
right,
you know, you're going to get X, you know, you're going to get the special deal today only, nothing like that. So in this environment, it's not about that. It's about, because here's and the other thing, notice that there's nothing in here about writing, because a, you know, part of your positioning will have that.
Sure. You know?
But it might sound counterintuitive. The assumption most clients is, you know, I kind of like to think of it as a dance, like a high school dance.
Sure.
You know, so you got people standing outside and you got people inside the dance, right? The assumption is that, you know, you've passed this threshold.
Right.
Once you're inside the dance, you got just about the same chance as others, give or take.
Right.
You know, but the difference, you know, once you're inside is, you know, it could be a 10 to 20% difference. But from outside to inside, though, it's like, you know, 80, 90% difference.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, as long as you can write well,
right,
then that's okay. Being in the dance, though, is about, hey, I understand your market. I understand the markets that you're going after and trying to communicate to.
Mm-hmm.
And here's proof that I understand and that I get it. You know, that's a lot more important. You know why? Those are not, and you'll hear me saying this a lot, and Susan will say this a lot. Those are the things you can't teach a writer overnight.
Right.
They could find somebody else who won these awards and, you know,
right,
supposedly, according to them, is, you know, a top-notch writer. You won't find anyone better. But you know what you can't teach that person? The fact that I'm in this particular market and I need help writing about X, and this is the first time, they're not very familiar with it. But now, Carrie, they know that you are intimately familiar with it.
Right.
That's worth so much.
Yeah, very good point. Very good point. And it works throughout the business world, not just in writing. I mean, you know, I could speak Japanese. But when I went to look for work, they say, yeah, but you're not an engineer, or you don't do this, or you don't do that. So they're looking for those, you know, like you say, it's really positioning. And I had trouble with that in certain jobs. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, now you say Japanese, so I'm fluent in Spanish. I'm bilingual. And in fact, I was talking to my wife about this the other day. I was having a hard time out of college landing a job, and I was starting to get nervous.
Right.
And we're coming off the recession, and you know what got me hired is finally I interviewed with one company who was looking to expand from Fort Lauderdale to Miami. They wanted to open up a branch in Miami. Mm-hmm. And Miami is, I mean, you have to be bilingual.
Sure.
And so I tick most of the boxes, but the one that I definitely ticked was bilingual. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like that alone got them to the 90% confidence in hiring me.
I see. Yeah.
You know, and then we had an interview, and that, you know, that took me to 100%.
Great.
But I went into that interview, again, into that dance, if you will, with a 90% probability. And that's what you want. You want to be honest and clear about your positioning so that when the right people come along, you're, before they even talk to you, they're at the, let's say, 70, 80%. The point of hiring you, probability.
Right.
But it's not going to be the writing stuff and all that. Just like with my case, it wasn't about my grades.
Right.
It wasn't about all the, I don't know, all the clubs and that I was involved with and that I hold office that I, you know, that didn't really matter.
Wow. Interesting. Oh, by the way, I've been living in Mexico for 5 years. So.
That's awesome.
I love it. My Spanish will never be very good, but they're pretty patient with me. So
nothing like immersion, though. Just a
language. Thanks so much. That was a very good answer. Very helpful.
You bet, Kerry. Yeah, good to have you on board. Okay. So let me get to Sam, and then we'll get to Michael. Sam says, I started writing a small book or booklet on a specific topic to establish some credentials on both the topic and as a writer, as well as for prospecting. I do have a website, but I'm not yet actively prospecting. Good idea, bad idea, suggestions. I'll listen only, no audio. I'm waiting for the cable guys, so I might get interrupted. Okay, no worries, Sam. Yeah, so pretty straightforward answer there. Here's my attitude toward booklets, reports, other lead magnets. So sometimes I work with clients, they already have something like that. And they want to know, hey, should I got this lead magnet, you know, I got this report that I wrote, should I use it? And my rule of thumb is, look, if you got it already, and if you want to take the time to set up the infrastructure, or heck, you got your website up and you already have an opt-in form on your site for that, then yeah, sure, keep it. As long as it doesn't clash with your positioning. So if you have, I don't know, if your lead magnet is about something that would not be attractive to your current target market, it would be completely off and it would actually, in fact, create some confusion, then I probably would keep it off. But if you haven't started writing it, or if you just started and you haven't finished, my suggestion, Sam, would be to just hit the pause button on that. Because it's one of those things that it could, and it will take several more hours of time and energy to complete, and will have a very limited value for you right now. So again, you know, at the beginning of the call, I talked about all these different things you could do, and it's overwhelming. My job, Susan's job, is to keep you focused on this roadmap. Are there other things you could do? Yes. Could some of those things give you value and actually help you in this journey? Absolutely. So I'm not saying they wouldn't help you. It's just a cost-benefit scenario here that we're evaluating. What is the benefit, the potential benefit of completing that book and getting it out there versus the cost in terms of time, effort, stress, taking focus away from the things that we're going to be teaching you? You know, that those are all costs. And my experience has been that the cost is too high for the potential benefit. So I'm not saying, you know, just scrap it. Just, you know, keep all your files together, keep it all in your hard drive, know where it is. But I would hit the pause button on that, because I want you focused on just the, you know, the roadmap we're going to be doing here. So let's get focused on positioning, then turning that into some strong messaging, and then let's start getting into your, getting your website reworked a little bit based on what you came up with. And then let's start prospecting and then go on from there. So yeah. Yeah, he says, I do think it was a bit of a delaying tactic. Yeah, I mean, it could be. I'm glad you're honest with yourself there. Many people are not. I know I, there are a lot of things even to this day that I do because, I mean, they sound exciting and I just like the, I like doing them. But if I'm honest with myself, I only have so much time and energy in any given day or week. And, you know, the question is, where's that going to take me? You know, it can't just all be about what I want to do and what's fun. I also have goals, you know? So yeah, good stuff. All right. So Michael, let me get to your positioning question. Michael says, it's a good follow-up to Chris's question. Mine right now is SaaS and FinTech. That's because my background is a business litigation attorney. No finance or tech background, but I wrote a FinTech newsletter last year that I enjoyed. Then when I search for prospects, many were not strictly FinTech, lots of procurement, supply management, et cetera. So I expanded to SaaS. Is that good positioning or would something like enterprise tech be better? Although it doesn't seem many use that term. Let's talk about that, Michael. It's a good question. And I got an idea that I want to run by you. So let me unmute you. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, good, good. So yeah, let me draw this out. So, you know, it sounds like now it's SaaS and FinTech and you actually say that right on your website.
Yeah. I say B2B SaaS and FinTech copywriter.
Okay. So if you do this, you're saying though that what you encountered is that in your research, it's like, hey, there's all these other ones that I could go after, but they don't quite fall under that. It could be procurement. It could be facilities management. It could be all these things, right?
Right.
And did they sound interesting to you, some of them?
They did. I actually prospected them. It was only after a while, after saying these prospects, I'm like, a lot of these people I'm prospecting to are not strictly FinTech.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
Even after I told you about the Zoom call I had with someone where I actually submitted the quote, they were procurement technology based in Austin. And it was after the Zoom meeting, which went well and everything, and they just didn't have any availability. Well, she said this quarter, so I'll follow up next quarter for a marketing budget. But after that Zoom meeting, it occurred to me, that wasn't really a FinTech company. And I maybe I should expand a little bit my positioning.
Oh, okay. Okay. So the way I like to think of it is, you know, that you could have one way to approach this is you have an umbrella category, target market, but then you have several subcategories that you could mention. And that works better when you do, and we kind of touched on this a little bit, but I'm going to kind of frame it a little differently. When you say, you know, SaaS, with a emphasis or specialty on the following. So procurement, facilities management, supply chain, and, you know, name another one, right? It helps if these three or four subcategories are somewhat related, you know, or not related, but they go okay together. So what would be another one? Construction management, let's say. You know, so when you think about it, and these are just, I just made these up, okay? Facilities management and construction management kind of go together, don't they?
Yeah. Those are good examples, by the way, too, because those are actually some of the ones that I prospected to.
Okay, perfect, perfect. So I got lucky with this example. supply chain management. I think still fits in here because I used to be in construction, sold construction software, and all a construction project is basically a supply chain, a temporary supply chain. You know, it's a right. temporary factory, and a factory needs a supply chain to feed it. And of course, it's part of the supply chain when it pumps out product, You know, it's sending product downstream. And procurement still fits in here because, you know, you got to buy the stuff, right, to make all this work. So I think somebody reading, and it's usually subconscious, sees how all these are kind of related, as opposed to, let's say, instead of procurement, you had supply chain management, facilities management, construction management, and then software to run massage therapy businesses, you know?
Yeah.
That would be weird. It's like, well, where did that come from? You know? So what I might do, I would say SaaS with an emphasis on fintech. If you had only one category, that's when you do this. And then you forget about the subcategories. But when you know you could help others, and I think with SaaS, that's actually a smart thing. Then I would take out, you know, fintech. I might make it one of these.
That's what I was going to say. Could fintech be one of those subcategories?
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of fits, you know?
Yeah.
And then just say, here are the areas of specialty within SaaS. And do that like right away. Don't wait for your about page or anything like your homepage should get into it pretty quickly.
Okay.
You know? And then that gives you some options. Now, what I suspect will happen to you is over the next few months, well, this was not, you're obviously not going to do massage therapy. So this is procure. Over the next few months, what will happen is, you know, if it's interesting, but fintech, I thought was going to be one of my winners. It just hasn't paid off. But I'm doing extremely well here and here and kind of okay here. And this has been a bust. So then in a few months, you can now restructure your message basically around these other ones. And it's great because how earlier I was talking about, if you really know the lay of the land, when I was talking about it here, then you can go narrow.
Yeah.
So what happens is, you know, as you learn, as you get the lay of the land, then just in all cases, you can go narrower. So in this case, now you can afford, you were hedging your bets with these four or five categories. Now you know who the players are. You know what the possibilities are. You know you can just go ahead and just, instead of betting on every number on the roulette table, you can say, you know what, these three are my winners.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, now if another one comes along, let's say that suddenly I get a lead, an incoming lead for a supply chain management software company. Yeah, I'm not going to say no to it, right? They're coming to me. So that's a great opportunity to pursue. I would absolutely have that conversation with them.
Okay.
Does that help?
So you think with going with SaaS and then having, you think going with SaaS as like my positioning, as my overall umbrella, is better than saying SaaS and fintech?
SaaS and then get to the categories right away.
And make fintech a subcategory of that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Unless you felt that the exception would be if you felt that, you know what, I'm not ready. I really want to just kind of narrow it down to, you know, fintech.
Yeah. SaaS, you know, I'm not that wedded to fintech. You know, it's more just like tech, you know, entrepreneur. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. Like the problem with SaaS is, yeah, I mean, a few years ago, you could just say SaaS, but look, can you name software these days that's not a SaaS? I mean, like everything has gone to the cloud.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything's a SaaS now. So it's almost like it's become kind of a weird category name before you could use it as a definite market. And now it's like the whole software space is SaaS. So it's now become a little too broad. So I think SaaS needs to be qualified if you're going to go for SaaS.
Okay. And do you think B2B SaaS like narrows that down sufficiently, or is that still broad by itself?
I still think that that's kind of, you know where that is? That's here.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's not no fly zone, but it's, I think you can do better. I think that's playing it way too safe. Because here's the thing, Michael. I mean, here's what gives me clarity. Are there enough procurement, construction management, and facilities management in fintech? I know I just narrowed it down, but SaaS companies for me to get busy prospecting?
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, there absolutely are.
Yeah.
So, in fact, there's more than you ever have time to even reach out to, even if you had 10 years.
Yeah. Because
the list keeps growing. So there's plenty of them. So you don't need to say B2B because, oh, I don't want to take chances. I really want to kind of cast a wide net. No, forget about casting a wide net. When you do that, your message gets diluted, especially in a world where SaaS is basically just software, period, you know? So when I started, I said high tech. I mean, talk about broad. In 2003, 2004, that still worked. It doesn't work anymore. Okay. It does work if you already have momentum. So if you already had clients for a long time and you're getting word of mouth and repeat business and people come to you, that's different. But when you're trying to really get things off the ground and build momentum, yeah, it's you're going to need to get a little more specific.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, it's a great question. This is good stuff to think through. And, you know, guys, with like I've said in the training, let me go back to the pyramid here. Something to keep in mind. Two things. I mentioned one of them. As you get out there and you get a little bit more experience, you start landing clients, you will be able to go from broad, let's say from we're starting at SaaS to maybe some more narrow categories. So for me, I went from high tech to enterprise software to eventually my clusters of clients were supply chain management, construction management, and data management. That's where I ended up getting the work. And what happened was that I just kept getting, you know, more clients here because I suddenly became known there and I started getting referrals in each of these. So I went deeper with each one of these. So I could afford at that point to just say, these are my three areas of specialty. But that happened. I couldn't have engineered that from day one. I had to start here and just kind of let the events unfold to enterprise software, which is still broad. But then after a few years, that's where I ended up. And it does make sense to do that. So just know that this is a temporary thing. You're going to move down this funnel over time, and you probably should move down that funnel over time, but don't start too far down from the beginning. Okay, so let's see. And regarding Michael and Chris, you know, with AB5, the AB5 law in California, you know, some of it is kind of up in the air right now. And there's a Proposition 22, you know, on the ballot here in November that it's going to, it basically says if you vote, I forget which one, but whichever one, you could vote yes, let's say, and that means that Uber and Lyft would be exempt, you know, like those kind of services would be exempt from that. So that could kind of take things in a different direction, who knows? But it's interesting. I thought that it would be kind of a huge thing by now where all these businesses across the board in California would say, nope, we can't do this. And I think it's really taken a long time. I think many of them are just really not aware. You and I are aware, but I'm surprised by how many businesses are either not aware or they just don't care. Or really the people who are hiring are not aware. So maybe legal department does, but they haven't really done much about it. So who knows? All right. So again, if you got a question, just type in a capital Q in the chat area. Give me an idea of what you've got. I'll unmute you and we can have a conversation. I don't see anything new. But let me just make sure I didn't miss anything. All right. John Luke has a question here. I've been working through the positioning exercise and a lot of my experience and interests seem to be spread pretty wide across multiple industries. I've done lots of writing in the solar industry for a running tech company, a nonprofit, mindfulness organization, a lawyer, a wedding hashtag company. Wow. These are all current clients, most of whom I'm working for free because they're family and friends. Okay. Wondering how to go about organizing that into a target market. Great question. Yes. So you got the opposite problem, which is, man, there's so many possibilities. I'm not sure which one to pick, right?
Exactly.
Look, good problem to have. Good problem to have. Welcome, by the way. Welcome to the group.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to be here.
Here's the framework I use. And look, I'm not saying this is going to spit out the right answer, you know, in the next 2 minutes. But this is a visual way of kind of assessing your options that I think if you go through it and then you let kind of the finalist marinate for a day or two, will probably give you something that you feel confident in just going to bat with. Okay. So there are four areas, and what I would do is put them into quadrants, take a sheet of paper. And this is your inventory, okay? This is, and I'll explain what each of these are. This is your network. This is the demand. And this is people topics. What you want to do is you want to take kind of your short list of possibilities. And you name some of them here. You know, solar. And by the way, what do you do? Are you working somewhere? Do you have a day job or are you dedicating full time to this?
Yeah. So the solar company is the one that is my current job. I'm a content writer for a Boston-based solar company.
Okay. Gotcha. So a nonprofit and you know, this X, Y, Z. And you know, in the positioning exercise, I walk you through what to put in that inventory list, right? So there's experience, background, skills, hobbies, et cetera. I always ask for hobbies because it's good with brainstorming. It's good to throw everything on the table, but in most cases, your real answer is not going to come from hobbies. And not every case, but in most cases. So then what you want to do is you want to take each individual item and then run it through the next three quadrants. And the way I like to do it is I just ask myself, all right, do I know people in that area, in that sector, or in that industry? And how would I score it? I like to use a check plus and check minus system. So check plus would be, yeah, I know quite a few people because I've been in this business for a long time. Check would be, some. Check minus would be, it's just an area of interest. I don't know a soul there, okay? Then again, sticking with solar, the next question, the next quadrant is about demand. Their demand, generally speaking, your best guess for content marketing. So do they... are they selling something that's new, innovative, complex? In other words, it needs to be sold. It needs to be marketed, which means that they need to create marketing content to help do that. And let's just say that from what you know, the answer is, yeah, absolutely. This is not a commodity that just kind of sells itself. And then the final one, again, sticking with solar, is my best guess, the people that I might be working with and the topics that I might be writing about, how excited am I, you know, for those when I think of them? You don't have to do research, just your best guess. And let's say as well, you know what, I've been writing a lot in solar. It's okay. So maybe that's a check. Okay. And then one last one, which I actually missed, would be in the first quadrant, how strong is your knowledge or experience there? And let's just say you give yourself a check plus. So in this example, again, completely hypothetical, you have a check plus, you have a check plus, you have a check plus and a check. So that really checks out well, you know? And then you just run through some of the other ones, you know? I suspect that with some of the other ones, this is your first experience in some of them, right?
Right. Yeah, I guess with the exception of the mindfulness organization.
Aha. So let's put mindfulness. And let's say this is either a check or check plus. And then, you know, this is a check. And depending on what are they selling, by the way, what the mindfulness organization?
Yeah. So both the organizations that I've done some work for are in the education world. Mm-hmm. And so one of them, I guess their product is meditation retreats. They run meditation retreats for teenagers. And then the other one, they are a mission-driven organization trying to integrate more mindfulness teachers into school systems. Mm-hmm. So the demand piece is an interesting question.
I would say maybe not as strong as something like, you know, tech is just kind of the classic check plus because it changes so frequently that new materials need to be written. There's always something new, something innovative, and that stuff is always expensive. I think what something like mindfulness has going for it is that it needs to be sold, right? Because even though we're entering kind of a new era with that, like you just mentioned school systems, integrating that into the school systems, that's still somebody needs to pitch that, right? So that points to a lot of content, some marketing materials, case studies, that kind of thing. So I would say at least a check, you know, maybe it's not quite your check plus, but at least a check. And I guess it depends too on, you know, what, and we'll talk more about this because I want to add another dimension to it. And then let's just say that you feel really strongly about this stuff, you know. So you're going to end up with a whole list that's going to, you know, it's going to have a series of checks, check pluses, check minuses, and that will at least give you kind of an objective way to look at them through the four dimensions that matter. I see too many people making target market decisions based on one out of the four, and you really need to look at all four of them. I'm not saying that, you know, you need to take a purely scientific approach because I think these things are still kind of a gut check, but this at least gives you some sort of a framework. Does this help?
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to add another dimension to it because as you start going through it, you might see, well, you know, solar, I'm going to have some limitations there because, you know, I'm employed there. Right. So I got to be careful. I can't really go after competitors. With mindfulness, there's only so many companies doing that kind of thing, you know, so can I really build a business around it? And there's this concept, and I'll send you a link to, in fact, let me find it. I'm going to put it in the chat area. I did an article on this last year where I talk about adjacent markets. Are you familiar with that concept?
No.
Okay. Adjacent markets, and so I'm gonna, actually it was earlier this year. For some reason this year feels like it's been 5 years. I guess the pandemic. All right. So I just put a link in the chat area, Jean-Luke, and take a look at that later. But here's basically the concept. Every market, like you can't look at it necessarily at face value and just say, oh, well, there's limited opportunity there. I like to draw a grid like this, and I like to put it in the middle, the what I'm considering, and mindfulness. That's going to be a limited market, okay? But when you start thinking through adjacent markets, that's going to expand the possibilities for you. And maybe what you do, instead of saying, I work for mindfulness organizations, of which there's only a few, you're able to talk about a different, broader category in which mindfulness exists. So I like to look at it laterally and then vertically. So horizontal and vertical. So what, you know, laterally would be other types of organizations that do kind of a similar thing, okay? So other kind of, you know, self, so if this is mindfulness, other kind of self-improvement, you know, spiritual development, okay? What would be physical health? Another category might be, and you know, you basically keep adding to this. You know, I always think of mind, body, and spirit, right? So, what are some other ones that kind of fit here? If we're talking about categories, can you think of a couple more?
Yeah, I think somewhere in the mental health world, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, outdoor education feels aligned as well.
Yes. So what's this starting to feel like? Again, it's like, all right, mindfulness is part of this broader world of mind, body, and spirit, right? And mindfulness kind of touches all of those, but then you start thinking through some other ones. And in fact, that's what you might come up with is, you know, I work with organizations that help individuals improve their mind, body, and spirit. I just made that up right now. I'm not saying that that's the language you use. And what it does is notice how it's expanded your reach. Instead of this limited category here in the middle, of which there's maybe only, I don't know, 30 organizations in the world, that's too limiting. You've now expanded it to several thousand. Okay, so that's adjacent markets. We didn't talk about vertical, but it would be up on top would be companies that sell to these organizations. So for instance, I have a coaching client who was, he worked for a nonprofit, actually a couple of nonprofits for several years. And rather than writing for nonprofits, he decided to go up here in this category, which is he started going after companies that sell to nonprofits, and specifically in many cases was technology companies. But there were other categories that he's worked with. Why? Well, he had a great case. He made a great case in his copy. He said, look, I can help you write for the people who had my job. You know, I understand nonprofits from this perspective, because I forget his roles, exactly what it was. But so that's a really powerful, positioning statement. And with this category, there wouldn't be too much, you know, on the downstream, but with other industries and markets, there would be, you know, like if manufacturing, for instance, maybe it's not this manufacturing category in the middle, but would it be the products they create, those companies that sell those products? So does this make sense?
Got it. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, that I love the vertical elements. Those are things I hadn't thought about.
Yeah. Yeah. So in mindfulness, the example, the biggest opportunities I think are going to be horizontal. Other, like in solar, that's more of a classic. It could be horizontal. I see lots of possibilities for horizontal, but solar also has vertical because the suppliers to these solar panel companies, you know, and then maybe not so much under that, but it could be the retailers or distributors of some of those products, or the people who then take those panels and then turn them into other things, then, you know, package them or bundle them, and then they're selling this other piece of equipment, you know, so that could be an example of downstream from the grid. So I wanted to just show that to you because as you're going through these, just be mindful, no pun intended, be mindful of, you know, the adjacent markets. Don't be too limiting or take this too literally.
Right. Yep. That makes perfect sense. Thank you.
You bet. Glad to help. Okay. Hey guys, great set of questions today. And it's good to see that you guys are really thinking through this stuff. You know, and hopefully one of the great things about this format I've found over the years is, you know, you come into the call and I encourage everyone to make as many calls as possible. We know that you're not going to be able to make every call, but even if you don't have questions, I hope you saw today an example of how you know, just showing up and listening to the conversations that I'm having with others can be helpful to you as well. Okay. So Chris has a question here. He says, while our focus clearly is B2B, if our clients provide products, services to consumers, is it also advised to say in our positioning statement that we also support B2C marketing, knowing the psychology of a client's clients? You know, you could, Chris, but it's, I wouldn't try too hard. It's like, oh, well, I got to make sure that, you know, I cover this or I cover that. Try it out in the copy and see how it sounds. I wouldn't overdo it in the copy. So for instance, I wouldn't put that on every single page. Oh, and I also support or know B2C marketing. Don't worry too much about that. That will kind of resolve itself. It's going to be one of those things that, again, the biggest thing is if you know the market, if you understand the topics, if you understand the people they're going after. And you can have something like this maybe on your bio or your about page or your why me page. You can kind of insert or sprinkle that B2C capability there. But I wouldn't, you know, plaster that on your homepage or anything like that. All right, so let's do this. Let's wrap up, and I'm going to come back to our slides here. And here's what I'd like to know. We'll close every call this way. I want to know what a takeaway was from today's conversation. If you wouldn't mind putting a capital T in the chat area and letting me know there, capital T, what was a takeaway? And I want to make sure, because you probably have some notes, and I don't want those notes to just be notes that get ignored. So I want to make sure there's at least one item on your notes that you circle or highlight, and it's something you're going to take action on. Okay, so what is your top action item for the next couple of weeks? And maybe it's not from your notes. Maybe you just know, hey, I got to move on and make my final positioning decision, or I'm done with that, and now I got to move on to session two, you know? So top takeaway, top action item, T for takeaway, A for action item in the chat area. Let me know what you've got. It's a good way to kind of check in and make sure you've got at least one item from each one of these categories. Carrie says, takeaway, I'm motivated to work hard on finishing the course. Awesome. Good to hear. Michael says, good idea to focus on positioning subcategories under the SaaS umbrella. There you go. Yeah. that came across, I think a couple times, right? It's when we were talking through different possibilities. So I'm glad that resonated. Who else for takeaways and action items? Sam says, takeaway, power of adjacent markets. Well explained. Yeah, thank you. And definitely take a look at that article. I got more examples there. And I talk about it a little bit more in depth, but at least you got the gist of it there. John Luke said, adjacent markets was the biggest takeaway. Ah, good. Chris says, identify the sweet spot for the inverted pyramid selection of target markets. There you go. Yeah. You want that, your starting place to be somewhere in the middle. Unless, I mean, we talked about the exceptions, right? Unless you just, you know, the specific sub-market really well and you feel comfortable starting there. You got that, man, that's always great. Most people don't, but sometimes I do work with writers who have that. So if you got it, go for it. All right, anyone else? And action items, I want to make sure you guys have an action item at least, you know, even if it's, hey, I'm going to finish going through the section or finish going through the positioning exercise. Anything like that is definitely a fair game. Sam says, yeah, actually, I'm developing a starter list. Good. All right, Sam, moving right through. Good to see. And Michael says, work on my new positioning, revamp website, and submit for review. Awesome. Good stuff. All right, guys. Well, listen, great work. Stay focused. You know, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy every week to stay focused. Just do your best. You ever fall behind, you feel stuck, let us know how we can help you. And if you do fall behind, don't give up hope, okay? It's very important that you just say, hey, all right, great. Tomorrow's a new day. Where did I leave off? And that's where I'm going to pick up. In fact, I'm going to kind of backtrack a little bit just to kind of review, and then I'm going to keep going. And then just don't try to schedule a whole day. You know, if you're busy, got lots going on, schedule an hour, you know, and get back on. It happens to all of us. It's very likely that you'll fall behind at least once. That's okay. Just pick back up where you started. Sam, no cable guy there yet, huh? Been there waiting for people who are supposed to show up at a certain time. Hey guys, listen, great conversations today. You guys have a great rest of the week, a wonderful weekend, and let's continue these conversations in the Facebook group. All right. Take care, everybody.